Well, good morning, everybody, and hope all the mothers out there here and at home have a wonderful Mother's Day. We're going to continue to talk a little bit about fear. And last week I gave a bit of an overview from Jesus sending out the 12. And we're going to look a little bit more, but we're going to focus on one aspect of it a little bit today. But I want to highlight this verse in 2 Timothy and verse 7. For God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. And so in this letter to Timothy, and I'm going to look for in a moment here from 3 through 7, he emphasizes to Timothy, whom he calls, you know, like his beloved child, who is a, you know, evangelist, a preacher of the gospel. And in this letter, you know, he's writing a number of instructions, teaching him a lot of things and kind of encouraging him in a lot of ways. But he starts out, you know, with this letter after the introductory couple of verses, just saying that this is Paul, who's an apostle of Christ, to Timothy, my beloved child. And then, you know, he wishes him grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and Christ Jesus our Lord. He says, I thank God whom I serve, as did my ancestors, with a clear conscience, as I remember you constantly in my prayers, night and day. And so Paul, as he's praying every day, both during the day and at night, multiple times during the day, he remembers Timothy and prays for his, I assume, his soul, his safety, his effectiveness. And he says, as I remember your tears, I long to see you, that I may be filled with joy. Now, we don't really know the whole background of remembering Timothy's tears, but he's praying that he will be filled with joy. And he says, I'm reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure dwells in you. For this reason, I remind you. And so he kind of talks about this history, talks about, you know, refers to something sad in his life. But he's reminding him of the faith that he has, that was in his mother and grandmother. And they had helped him and encouraged him and taught him in these things, which he also talks about again in chapter 3. But he says, I'm reminding you to fan into flame the gift of God. And so the gift that God has given us, he's saying, I need you to, you know, it's like when you build a fire. You know, if you want to have, you know, you go camping, you want to roast some marshmallows, you want to build a fire, you know, at night when it's cool. Well, you know, you start it, but a lot of times you got to fan it. You know, you have to get it going in order to, you might get a spark there, but then you need some oxygen to it. And he's telling us that we need to really fan that. And so he's reminding him to do that. And so when he does that, he says, which is in you through the laying on of my hands. And so now he's talking about the influence that even he had on Timothy. And he says, you need to do all of this. You need to fan into flame this gift I've given you because, and that's for, God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power, love, and self-control. And so something about this gift that he's trying to get him to fan the flame of and to grow it has something to, at least in part, with his attitude and the spirit with which he's doing things. And he's saying, listen, can't do it. God didn't give us fear. And so if you're dwelling in fear, that didn't come from God. And God gave us the spirit of power. And he gave us the spirit of love and self-control. And when those things are not guiding our choices and our attitudes and our spirit, then there's something wrong. And so we're going to talk a little bit today about why Jesus told his apostles to flee sometimes. Sometimes in the face of fear, the right reaction is to run away. And we're going to look at some other verses about that. But this idea of, in fact, I was thinking about it yesterday a bit, and it reminded me, after I'd kind of finished the lesson, I was thinking, you know, some of what this reminds me of is when Paul writes about in Romans 14 about those who some think they want to treat all 7 days exactly alike, and some want to have special days that they honor God, and other days, you know, they don't do it. And he said he didn't tell them to do one or the other, but he said whichever they do in Romans 14, they have to do it for God. So if you want to treat every day exactly the same, all 7 days, that's fine. Do it for God. And if you want to have special days, that's fine. Do it for God. And it reminded me a little of this fear, dealing with fear. Because he tells us to not be afraid. But sometimes he tells us to run away. But he's not telling us to run away because of fear. He's telling us to run away because it's the right thing to do. And learning how to do that, I think, takes some wisdom, takes some, maybe it's a challenge maybe to always know which is the right thing to do. But I want to look at this because these are the first couple of points we looked at last week in these instructions that he gave to the sending out of the 12. And I kind of just highlighted it as there is a time to flee, but not because of fear, but rather for righteousness. And so in the first, 11 verses there, from 5 to 15, he told the apostles to proclaim the kingdom is at hand. Go out into all the communities here in Israel, proclaim the kingdom is near. It's right close to you. And he says, heal the sick and do miracles. Give what you have been given to them. Bring your peace to them. And if they won't listen to you, if they won't support you, if they won't provide for you, then move on. Okay. Now, so that's kind of their primary purpose of being sent out, to preach the gospel. But then he tells them, you're going to be persecuted. They will try you and flog you, but don't be anxious about defending yourself. Now, some of that appears to be foretelling what was going to happen later. Doesn't seem like it happened in that particular moment. But it obviously came upon them after Jesus died and was resurrected, that they were tried and flogged and beaten. And as far as we know, most every apostle was killed. They were all put to death. Maybe the exception is John. I don't really know how he died. He lived longer than apparently any of the others. But we don't have it in Scripture about how all of them died. There's some historical references to how each of them died. I don't know how accurate they are. But all of them state that they all faced death, not peacefully, that they were all killed. And so the next section, by the way, after this, when he says they're going to hate you, but, you know, just like they did the master. And when they persecute you, he says, flee. Flee to the next town. But you know what he says in verse 26? Don't be afraid. So he didn't say, okay, flee because, you know, that's really terrifying. You're going to get hurt. No, he says, flee. Don't. If they're not going to support you, they're not going to listen to you, and they're going to persecute you, just go on to the next town. But in verse 26, he started saying, and I'm not going to go into it very much, but he said, don't be afraid of them. Don't be afraid of those who can kill the body, but can't kill your soul. You need to be afraid of the one who can kill both the body and the soul. That's where our fear needs to be, is with God, not with people. And even though, as I talked about more last week, all of us have innately created in us a fear reaction. And I don't believe that the commandments to not be afraid are telling us to never have that fearful reaction. I think he's telling us to not react out of fear, but to get rid of the fear, put it away, and figure out what you need to do by being courageous. by being able to do the thing that God asked you to do, regardless of the consequences that might be in front of you. And so sometimes that means running away. And so I want to kind of, today, I just want to highlight this a little bit more, the fleeing part. Because there are some passages, and I put down a lot of passages. I'm just going to look at a couple of them today. And I want you to think about this passage in Ecclesiastes 9:4. This is a proverb that is given to us in this book. He says, "But he who is joined with all the living have hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion." Sometimes you need to accept that you're going to be the living dog that runs away rather than the dead lion that stood up and fought. What's interesting about this proverb to me, and this I don't believe this is necessarily in the verse. I don't think he's hinting at this, but it made me think about it. Each of us needs a dead lion, right? Because if the lion of the tribe of Judah had not died, you and I have no hope. So our lion had to face his death and had to go to his death in order to give us hope. So there is a time to be a dead lion, but not every time. And there is a time to run away. There is a time to be the living dog. And we might not think of it this way, but there are times that Jesus runs away. There was only one time he stayed, and that was when it was time to die. Now, he knew all that, understood all that, and you and I don't always have that, you know, that clarity of the end of our lives like he did, or know when to stand and when to run. But just understand this passage, and I want to read more of this. I actually want to read from 1 through 6, because I want you to get the whole context of what is being taught here in Ecclesiastes 9. He says, But all this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is of love or hate, man does not know. Both are before him. It is the same for all, since the same event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and to the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner, and he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that the same event happens to all. Also, the hearts of the children of man are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that, they go to the dead. The point of these first, you know, three verses, and that what he calls this great evil, is that regardless of how good or how bad you are, you're going to die. And he said, it happens to everybody. And now he's commenting on how that's awful. How everybody dies. No matter how good you are, no matter how bad you are. And we can look at all kinds of examples of really, really wonderful people who have very short lives. I believe Josiah is in his 30s when he is killed. And God says that he was giving him a gift by having him not see the fall of Jerusalem and how it would be destroyed and how he would take all the people away to Babylon. He didn't want Josiah, because of his goodness, to have to see all that. So he allowed him to die in combat, in battle. Dying in your 30s to most of us doesn't seem like a blessing, does it? But God gave him that blessing. And so we don't always see it the way God sees it. And so there's lots of examples like Manasseh, as bad and about as evil a human being as ever existed in Israel, for sure, but in most of the world, in all of human history, who has the longest reign in all of Israel or Judah's history of kings. He reigns for 50 years. And why does his expand? Why is his given so much time to do all that evil? We don't know. We don't always understand these things. We don't know why some people are given long lives and some people aren't given long lives. It doesn't appear to have anything to do with goodness or evil. You know, lots of examples of both that, you know, have long or short lives. But the truth is, no matter how long or short, it still ends. This flesh is meant to die. And so, but he says, and that's the whole context of what he says here in verse 4, but he who is joined with all the living has hope. So when we die, we're done. And so the reason that we want to flee and live to fight another day is that we have still more to do on this earth, right? Think about, for example, and it's a passage I didn't put down, but in 2 Timothy, and I read the first few verses of to Timothy there, but in the end of the book, in chapter 4, Paul tells him that he's done, that I've been poured out, that I'm not going to do any more work, I'm not going to travel around and preach the gospel anymore, that he tells him he's going to die. He's hoping to see him soon before that, but he's like, that's it. My life's over. I've finished the race, he tells us all in that his last letter in his life, well, at least, you know, that was published for us. And so he had no more to do. It was time to go. And long before that, he writes about his own death. And he says, you know, whether to go or stay, you know, it's kind of, I'm hard pressed between the two. But he says, to stay is better for you, but to go, I would enjoy better. I'd rather die and be with God because I get to have my reward. And so from his perspective, he'd rather go. But he says, I've got stuff to do. I have things I can do and help you. I can preach, I can encourage, I can build up, I can do all these things. But at the end of, you know, of his 2 Timothy letter, he's like, okay, I'm done now. I've done all the stuff I was going to do. And it's time for me to go. And he was resigned to that fact. He understood that fact. And so you can see, really, in all of these people, there was time for each of these, and for all of us, I think, as well, to know that there is a time to run, and there's a time to stand, whatever the fear may be. Now, Jesus fled from Pharisees. It wasn't time to be the dead lion yet, right? So a couple of passages, Matthew 12 talks about it, John 10 talked about it, where he is like, they want to attack him, they want to kill him. He's like, okay, I'm out of here. In John chapter 10, you know, he has to, when he flees, he has to come back later to raise Lazarus. And Lazarus lives in Judea, and it's in Judea where all the threats are. And it'd be a little bit like, you know, you fled Idaho to another state so, you know, the Idaho authorities couldn't grab you, right? Well, and then you go, well, let's go back to Idaho and let's, you know, do something. And people, they're like, well, wait a second, the authorities are there to grab you and they're going to kill you. And so when he told his apostles, hey, let's go back and go see Lazarus, you know, they're like, well, wait a second, they want to kill you. And in that passage, they all end up saying, well, okay, let's go with him. And hey, if we're going to die, we're going to die. They were kind of all ready to go die. Now, it wasn't their time. It was going to be his, but not theirs. And so it was okay in one sense. Would it have been better the night? Remember, this is kind of an application here to think about. When Jesus was arrested, what did all the apostles do? Well, one of them began to fight. Only one of them had a sword, and that's Peter. And then Jesus tells him to stop, heals Malchus's ear, whom he'd cut off, and says, and what did the rest of them do, though, when Jesus was arrested? They left. They fled. They got out of there. Now, I assume because of fear. Peter had some fear when he went up and, you know, he followed, you know, at a bit of a distance and kind of to see what was going to happen to Jesus. And, you know, when he's arrested and in the house and, you know, he's out in the courtyard pretending he's not really a disciple of Jesus. And, you know, but, and there was probably some fear there. But, you know, here's the odd thing, and why ultimately I don't think Jesus was really that terribly upset. He knew it would happen. Why God wasn't terribly upset is because it actually was supposed to happen. They weren't supposed to die there. Jesus was. That wasn't their time to die. Even if they had no fear and they understood everything righteously, they would have understood, okay, this isn't my time to die, it's his time to die, and I've got to run. I've got to flee so I don't get killed. I don't think they had that understanding, but they could have. And if they had had that, that would have been actually accurate. You think about Peter. You know, a lot of times, and I hadn't even really thought about this until I was kind of reading this the other day. When Peter was arrested, and this is that time, James the apostle has already been killed by Herod. And it pleased the Jewish authorities. And so Herod was like, hey, all right, I made them happy. And they're kind of, he needs them on his side to rule the area. And so he's like, oh, well, let me grab another one. So he grabs Peter. We're gonna kill him too. Well, he's arrested and he's got, you know, armed guards, you know, chained armed guards. And we, most of us know the story of how in the middle of the night, the angel of the Lord frees him, gets him out of the prison, and then he ends up, once he's out of the prison, he's like, hey, go. And he ends up going to John Mark's mother's house, where they're praying for him. And, you know, the servant girl, like, hears Peter at the door, and she leaves the door shut and runs and tells him, I see Peter, and they don't believe her. And then finally, it's like, Peter comes in, and oh, wow, Peter's here. At the end of all that, Peter leaves, goes to Caesarea, because not time for him to die by the hand of Herod. And he ran away. You know that? And I realized we don't know what happened to Peter in Scripture after that. Now, historically it tells us he ended up in Rome. It's probably accurate, but don't know. Did he go from, would he stay in Caesarea a while and then he head off to Rome? We don't know exactly all that, those details. But he fled. It wasn't time to die. Notice in this particular moment was unlike like in Acts chapter 4 and Acts 5 when Peter and John or all of the apostles were arrested, beaten, threatened, and then they were released, and then they're right away. They go straight out into the, you know, courtyard and start preaching again. They violate the commandments they were given, violate what the authorities say, and preach the gospel right in public again. Assume God told them to do that because he knew they wouldn't be killed because they, it wasn't their time to die. But in those moments, they stood. They stood up to what the threats. They stood up to the persecution. God told them to. But in this case, no, it's time to get out of town. Time to get out of Dodge here. And we're going to go someplace else. And so we think about another one, Paul. Paul fled time after time. It's hard to even count how many times Paul had to run, right? I mean, all through the book of Acts, 9, 14, 19, you know, in chapter 14, a few places there, chapter 17, chapter 20. I mean, he kind of keeps getting run out of town from place to place. You know, and we even know, and I think I talked about this one last week, Paul had actually gotten to the point that he was afraid he was going to die when he was in Ephesus. And he was let out, you know, through the wall, let down night to leave and get away from there. But he thought he was going to die before he ran away. And got out of there. Because it wasn't his time. And next week we're going to talk about his next reaction. Because Paul didn't do that because he was afraid. I'm going to make that claim to you, that I don't believe Paul ran from Ephesus, ran to the other places because of his fear. I think he did it because he had things to do. Like we know in Ephesus, he was still planning on collecting all of the monies to take to Jerusalem. And we know when going to Jerusalem, he had made a vow that he needed to keep. So, because that's going to be important, what we're going to look at next week is why did he not run when he knew he was threatened in Jerusalem? Time after time. In fact, he tells us in the book of Acts that city after city, he was being threatened through by, he was being told by the Spirit through prophets, you're going to be grabbed and arrested when you get there. And yet he says, he tells them, I'm ready to die. We'll look at that more next week because I want to look at when is it time to stand? When is it time to face and do the thing you're supposed to do, even if you have to die? When does God give us that, you know, side of it? But in all these cases, it was not time for them to do that. It was time for them to leave. Get out of there. Don't have that fight. Don't have that battle to the death at this point. And so I want to think about it. Now, this is the verse in the passage I really want you to think about. And made me think about it. It's kind of an interesting, I'm going to apply something here maybe in a little different way than you would have thought about it before. And that is Romans chapter 6, in starting in 15. When the concept is Paul is kind of anticipating some people's thought process from his teaching. Is should we sin because we're not under law but under grace? And he says, no, by no means, you shouldn't be thinking that way. That shouldn't enter your mind. But he says in verse 16, do you not know that if you present yourselves to anyone as obedient slaves, you are slaves of the one whom you obey? And that term slaves could be just a servant as well, kind of a bond servant. And he says, when you present, it's like, I am going to serve you, and you present yourselves to obey. And then he goes, to any person, that you become a slave of that person, a servant of that person. And so that he then applies it to the idea of sin and righteousness, not people. And he says, either of sin, which leads to death, or of obedience, which leads to righteousness. And he says, but thanks be to God that you who were once slaves of sin have become obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching to which you were committed. And having been set free from sin, have become slaves of righteousness. I'm speaking in human terms because of your natural limitations. He's like, we're not technically slaves of righteousness, but he's just using an analogy here. And the analogy is imperfect. But he's saying, the one who rules you becomes your master. The one you obey is your master. And if you obey fear, then fear becomes your master. And the problem with that is, did God give us a spirit of fear? No. So if we act out of fear, we're not being godly. That doesn't mean we won't run. It doesn't mean we won't protect ourselves. Doesn't mean we won't flee. That can all still be godly. But we do those things because it's the godly thing to do, not because it's, I'm afraid. I don't know. I hope that makes sense. Because I've been kind of reading a lot of scriptures for a while, trying to understand this concept of fear, that God is trying to get us to not be afraid. And yet, it's like, wow, he does tell them to run. He does tell them there's time to do that. He does tell us it's not always time to stand up and fight and die on this hill. But how do I know how to do one versus the other? I'm going to eventually get to that one part. But next week, we're going to look a little bit more at this, the part of when to stand. And some examples of that, some other scriptures about that idea of when it's time to be courageous and face whatever the fearful thing is.